Welcome to Marketing Wins, How Real Brands Move Forward. I'm Valerie Morris, and on each episode, we dive into real topics with real people about how they're getting their next little or big win in marketing. If you're new to the show, go ahead and hit subscribe on whatever podcast player you are listening to right now. That way, you will not miss a single episode of Marketing Wins. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining me today. I've got my colleague and friend, Jessica Riles, here from CFO Colleague, and she is, I'm really excited to have her on because she is not necessarily someone who went to school for marketing, but she is someone who has embraced marketing in her company and in her organization. And I've just been really impressed by just the very natural approach that she's taken towards it. And so I really wanted to have her on. I think it's important just for people to see like, oh yeah, like I've got this business. I could be in Jessica's shoes too, you know? And so Jessica, thanks so much for coming on and sharing about your story.
So hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to chat.
Yeah. Why don't we start by telling me or telling the listeners here, like a little bit about what your role is in CFO Colleague, what you guys do, maybe a little bit about like, what did you go to school for? Like, what's your background in? Because you aren't a marketer necessarily. Just to give a little bit of context around like, what are you doing? What's your place in this world here when it comes to CFO Colleague?
Yeah, for sure. So taking this back, I was a accounting major undergrad, which I, P.S., highly recommend. All of my kids, friends, and teens that want to be business majors, I try to convince to be accounting majors, but maybe that's a spiel for another day. So I majored in accounting, and then I went right out of school to work for Deloitte for 3 years as a financial statement auditor, which was also a fascinating learning experience. Got exposure to a bunch of different industries, met people, traveled, maybe not to exotic locations, but that was really cool. And then when I got married, my husband was pastoring a church in Australia. So I moved there for 4 years and I worked in business intelligence as kind of a liaison between our external actuaries and the rest of the business. Also did some financial reporting work for them. And then when we returned to the States, I moved into higher education. I worked at a local college for 5 years as an assistant controller and then a kind of financial reporting analyst. And then I moved out sort of on my own with CFO Colleague, which is a firm that my dad founded after he left being a CFO in higher education to support really business offices and the financial side of colleges and universities all over the US. So what we do is we bring kind of professional support and resourcing to colleges. Our firm as a whole does a lot of kind of interim resourcing. So they're between CFOs. They need somebody to kind of steer the ship while they find their next person. We'll send somebody to them for a little while to fill in that gap. My team in particular, we really dive into the details. We provide accounting and financial reporting support to business offices and largely to small colleges who might not be able to afford a professional, a kind of full-time professional staff. We can provide some of that sort of professional work on a more fractional basis. It's a little more affordable for them, but also, you know, doesn't have somebody kind of sitting there twiddling their thumbs because they want to be working at a high level all the time. So that's really the kind of 40,000 foot level of where I've come from and what it brought me to.
Yeah, it's not very often that I have accountants or people with such a strong finance and data background like you do on a marketing podcast, but we got connected through some mutual friends and you'd reached out for some support around how to maximize LinkedIn a little bit more and maximize some of the content that you were making. And that really opened my eyes to just like, you are doing something, like I mentioned earlier, it's not rocket science, but you have taken ownership over kind of being a face of your brand, your
you might be the main face of your brand, but you don't have to be. But you've embraced being a face of your brand and also being a face of just, controlling what the message is that you are putting out there about your brand. And so that's one thing that I see a lot of companies that will come and hire like me and my team to actually do the work for them. Some of it is, you know, time, logistics, we get it. Like you need somebody who can help you stay on course and be strategic. But some people just have no idea how to even think about being a face of their brand. And so that really struck me when I was talking with you and seeing what you're doing, because you probably, my guess is you probably didn't take very many marketing courses in college. And so you were kind of having to pick this all up, you know, as you're trying to figure out how do I help position this brand that I am very invested in for the long haul and really turn this into something. So tell me a little bit about your journey to kind of embracing that within CFO Colleague, and where did you start? Like, did you go to Google to research? Did you pick people's brains? Like, how did you get the ideas of, because you created a podcast of your own, like you've got a lot of cool things that you're doing and making around CFO Colleague. How did you kind of get started with that?
Yeah. So it really, the journey started with succession planning, because my dad's going to be retiring in a couple of years, and he's pretty well known within our industry niche. He's worked in higher ed for many years. I'm planning to take over the business, and I knew that I needed to get some credibility out there before it's just like, oh yeah, my kid's taking over kind of thing, which I chafe at because I'm, you know, a very independent human, mm-hmm. and never envisioned that I would be in this sort of family business kind of role. But as I was thinking that through, I started kind of scouring the internet for like, how do we move beyond what we're doing? Higher ed finance is a particularly conservative industry. Our people are skittish and skeptical, I guess is a better word. Mm-hmm. They're very skeptical. And so the marketing landscape amongst higher ed is so old school. They don't trust anyone. They won't respond to a cold call email. You know, they trust their counterparts at other universities. So they'll go to a listserv and ask, who have you used before? And the listservs, let me tell you, they are locked down. You cannot get on a listserv as a consultant. It has to be somebody else who's in that role. And so our firm, the way it was founded, was positioned as CFO Colleague, to really come in as a colleague, not as some external mm-hmm. person who's going to drop a report on your desk and leave, but somebody who's going to come alongside. And so as I'm thinking about my role in that, I was like, okay, so how do I get people of my generation who are coming up through the ranks and going to be the CFOs, or in many cases already are the CFOs at these institutions, how do I reach them? So I went on this foray and paid for a massive social media training and started multiple LinkedIn or multiple Facebook pages, multiple Instagram accounts. And let me tell you, crickets. I was in the wrong place. And so I was like, okay. And then I shelved it for a couple of years because I was like, what's happening? So fast forward, yeah. I got an email from this company that says, hey, we're going to help you write a book and market, you know, market the funnel on the back end, whatever. So I attended their workshop and I was like, they're right. This is amazing. And then they wanted, I kid you not, 25 grand to work with them. And I was like, well, no.
That's not in the budget this year.
Nope. That's not in the budget. I mean, I'd been running my business really like a job, which is maybe a separate conversation where I had to level up and start running it like a business. But, yeah. But through that process, I was like, well, wait, I can do this. I had already, so I guess I have to step back. I had heard somebody talking about like, hey, if you want to start a podcast, just start a podcast. And I was like, I can talk to people. So I just started interviewing people, and you'll see I've got the fancy microphone now, but a lot of times it was just on Zoom. I just have a Zoom call with somebody and I would send them 4 questions ahead of time that I wanted to talk to them about and record it. And one of my husband's friends knew something about podcasts. And so I asked him how to do it. And it just was like, I don't know, done is better than perfect. I'm a very, I don't know how much you get into like Enneagram stuff. I'm a very Enneagram 3, like I'm just going to do the thing. And so I was just like, I'm going to put it out there.
I think that might be why we get along, because I'm very much very similar. I've just done is better than perfect. So I love that.
Yeah. So I just leaped in on the podcast thing. I was doing 1 episode a week. And then by like the end of May that first year, I was just like, oh, can't do it. 3-month break. but I got back at it and whatever. And now at this point I'm doing like mostly biweekly, because it's in addition to all the other things I'm doing. It does end up on the back burner a lot of the time, but it has, you know, we've noticed we're still going to the conferences. We're still doing the old school marketing. And we've noticed that people will say like, hey, I listened to your podcast on this. Or, you know, I had somebody reach out asking for help with endowment accounting. And I was talking to one of my friends. I was like, where did this come from? And she said, well, you just released a podcast episode on endowment accounting last week. And I was like, oh, so I've been... You know, I'm just over here getting surprised when the marketing efforts work, I guess. Yeah. So anyway, I kind of dropped the book segment, but long story short, I hired my own book coach, did not pay him $25,000. I wrote my book, I had it edited, I had somebody help me get it loaded into Amazon, and it is not flying off the shelves, but it is helping people and it's out there. And I feel like I'm kind of building this credibility foundation for when I eventually take over the business and the brand. And it's not kind of a surprise to people of, you know, where's Jeff, which is my dad's name. So,
yeah. Well, okay. So yes, done is better than perfect. Like if anyone is listening to this, like that is one of the biggest things that holds some of my clients back. They get so nitpicky on, in my opinion, dumb things. They really are not going to make or break the success of the content. Or they're scared to put themselves out there, you know, and what I'm hearing you say is like, I'm not hearing a lot of fear in your voice. You just knew like, I have to put myself out here in some way. So like, let's just get at it. The other thing I loved about what you just shared was just that like you didn't stop all of the other traditional things that you'd been doing, the conferences, you know, maybe some of the old school, you know, reach outs, all that kind of stuff that you had been doing that the industry maybe knows and trusts from, you know, a former generation, and probably will still continue to trust even as a new generation comes up the ranks. But, you know, I love that you guys didn't stop the old stuff, you know, you kept both running in tandem and you've given the podcast a chance to really become something. And I think that's important because a lot of times people will start something new and they will expect overnight results for it. And they don't realize that it takes a little bit of time for things to build momentum. And to expect overnight results, especially with content marketing, it's just a little, in my opinion, it's a little naive to think that you put one podcast episode out and it's going to change your whole business. For you, it sounds like you've seen a little bit of the snowball effect of, you know, over time, all these relationships that you've built and having the podcast interviews themselves and then the content that's getting put out and the people listening to the podcast, like there's a lot of power in that. So I love that you've embraced that and you just started and just ran with it. So you have this podcast and I love too that you said like you were really consistent with it for a while and then you dropped off, but then you got back into it. Like the consistency and just diving back in, picking up where you left off. I mean, the reality is your audience probably didn't realize that you had taken a 3-month hiatus. you know, from their end of things, all they see is when you put out a new episode. So, or when you share an old one. So, talk to me a little bit about like, how has the team embraced the concept of creating this content? Cause it sounds like that wasn't something you guys had been doing prior. You know, what has been the, you know, kind of sentiment around the team of kind of putting yourselves out there a little bit more? Cause I just know from the accountants I've worked with in the past and some of the folks that like to be a little bit more behind the scenes, a little hard to put yourself out there, especially on social media and creating content.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked, because we do have, we have that, like some of our consultants are like, they might have a LinkedIn page, but they're like, I don't do anything with it. It's like, that's fine. But for the ones that do or are interested in it, like I have two business partners that are both my parents' generation. And so my dad and our other business partner, and they, from the LinkedIn review that you and your team did with us, we were able to look through and see some things they were already doing that they could just maximize more. So it's like, hey, when you post one of these things, my dad will often write a little comment about the industry or something that's happened recently, just post it on your page and then reshare it on the company page. And that'll increase its reach and it'll affiliate kind of you and what's the conversations happening on your page with our brand as well. And we've seen a lot of success from that. We have our email newsletter that goes out twice weekly that our other business partner puts together. He can, you know, you told us how we can maximize that on LinkedIn too. And so it's just been, it's been a real opportunity to say kind of in this baby step format, okay, you're already doing this. Mm-hmm. If you do this little tweak, then that means it gets to more people. Really, our team has really embraced that. And even my my analyst who helps me with my podcast editing and some of my social media work, I had scheduled a couple posts out and she went and looked at them when she was scheduling a post. And she said, you scheduled it for this time, but they said schedule it for that time. Do you want me to change it? And I was like, yes. So it's like all these little tiny pieces of something that just takes what we're doing and brings it up that one little level.
Yeah.
So that I'm not spending a lot of time thinking about marketing, although, you know, I want to be. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about what I've learned. That's one of my Clifton strengths is learner. And so whenever I can get into something where I'm learning something new and I get real excited. But anyway, just those little pieces that are like something we were already doing that we're taking that much further. I've had our various team members as guests on my podcast that I can interview.
I find that
the interview, you know, being an interviewer is a lot of fun for me because I love having these conversations, asking the questions. That's been an opportunity for people who wouldn't necessarily, you know, pick up their phone and take a video of themselves, but they will come on the podcast and answer my questions. So that's been really cool too.
Now remind me, do you do your podcast as a video or just audio?
We just do it as audio thus far. Nice. I haven't quite been ready to sort of make the leap into video yet, but maybe if that's I can get some of this work off my desk.
Well, I love that because a lot of people actually find podcasting to be a very approachable thing because pretty much anyone can sit and talk about their area of expertise. You go to a barbecue, you go out to eat with somebody, they ask you about what you do for a living. Everyone's used to doing, you know, like a 1 to 5 minute spiel on what they do. So a lot of people can feel like, okay, yeah, I can jump on and talk with someone for a podcast interview. That feels very approachable. You add video onto it and then it's like, oh, well, how does my hair look? Did I smile enough? Did I look engaged? Like it adds another level of things to it. So yeah, it's like walk before you run. Like you can always add video later. And a lot of podcasters embrace video, but like if that's going to hinder you from actually doing the thing, just start with the audio, build up to doing video clips down the road. It's amazing how just a simple podcast can really help. And I love that like you guys have a very specific niche of people that you help. You know exactly who your target is. And I have actually found that some of those kinds of podcasts do really, really well you may not have like the hundreds of thousands of downloads per episode, like, you know, the big names out there in podcasting have, but the caliber of people listening to your shows is going to be so much higher. So, you know, for people listening, like if you can specialize and narrow your show down or your content down, you're really gonna do well. So I love that you kind of embraced this, and you probably fell into that probably just naturally, like because you are so niche in what you do. But you know, that's helping you out big time. So all right. So okay, talk to me a little bit about how have you innovated in the last few years to get your brand message out even more? Like, what are some steps you've taken intentionally to adjust? I mean, were you in this before COVID hit? Like, did that change anything of like how you were talking to people? How have you evolved? I mean, COVID feels like it was just yesterday, but I mean, we're pushing 4 years here. So, you know, a lot's changed in 4 years, but, you know, talk to me about the last few years. Like, how have you innovated?
Yeah, I keep talking about COVID, like 2 years ago this, 2 years ago that. And it's like, it wasn't 2 years ago, really. I mean, we were on the tail end of some things 2 years ago, but it was a while ago. Yeah, actually for my business in particular, doing remote support, COVID actually opened up a whole new world because, like I've said before, our people are very conservative in their thinking. They did not believe that this kind of work could be done remotely until they and their teams all had to go home and do it remotely. And so after that point, we actually got a lot more interest in the work that specifically my team is doing because it was now a possibility. And so in some of our messaging since then, it has been, we have shifted from like, hey, this is possible. Look, here are two or three other places who have done it, to they already know it's possible. Here are the things that we've done for other people that could help you too. So that has been, it's been a real, you know, opportunity for us business-wise to, like we're almost past the first hurdle now, where before getting past that first hurdle was nearly impossible because they didn't believe it could be done. And so that's an example where this sort of change in mindset happened in the industry, which has allowed us to move to that second hurdle of here's what we've done successfully for other people, or tell me about what's going on and I'll tell you how we can solve it. You know, we're already at that point in the conversation now.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. I mean, for an industry like yours, and you know, it's funny is I, back in the day, I worked for a company that was purchased by, it's changed names a few times, but it's now it enveloped into what is Ruffalo Noel Levitz. Mm-hmm. And so they're in the higher education space as well in data, which it's kind of funny to me when I think back to the fact that I worked for them for about a year, but data numbers are not making me sing all day long, but
not your jam.
Worked for them. not really my jam, but just from that little bit of exposure I had in working in that space, I understand 100% what you're saying about just it feeling a little bit old school in the way that people approach things, and just there's kind of like there's a set way that things operate in that industry. And I love that COVID kind of disrupted that a little bit. And I mean, it really helped someone like you who is really trying to, you know, reach people, maybe our parents' generation who are like, this is the way it's always been done. We can't do it this way, to, oh no, here, you know, it's kind of just given that shake for you. So I'd never thought about it that way until you said that. So And then when you talked about like, you know, your dad and your other business partner, you know, embracing just the simple reshare, you know, a simple little thing, because what's great about that is it's leveraging their audience a ton, but positioning the brand / you as that new trusted thought leader. And they're almost giving their word of endorsement every time they hit share. So I love that they've embraced that, because there's a lot of folks who are especially close to retirement that are like, nah, I got one foot out the door. You know, the fact that they understand the importance of carrying on the brand beyond them is great. So that's wonderful. All right. So I'm sure it's not all been roses and sunshine as you've embraced this marketing role. So what has been like one hurdle or challenge that you've come up against as you stepped into kind of embracing being the content, you know, voice, if you will, speak pipe of the brand? What's a challenge that you've come across, and like, how did that go? What did you do?
Yeah. So one of the challenges I kind of glossed over earlier, but was when I first was like, I'm going to do the content marketing thing, and then just absolutely no response. And I felt like I was bending over backwards trying to find, you know, this great content and stuff that would drive people in and all of these things. And just really the sense that like, did I get this wrong? Like, it seems like everybody else is doing this and it's working for them, but why isn't it working for me? That was probably the hardest thing. And part of why, you know, I shelved some of it for a couple of years, because I was like, clearly either I don't understand or my audience isn't here or something. At the end of the day, I think it was both. But really, as I try to step into this role, it has required of me a sense that done is better than perfect. Because when I record an episode and think, that wasn't my best work, like, oh, well, I think it'll still be useful to somebody. Here you go, world. like just being willing to put that imperfect side of myself out there. I will say too that, you know, personality wise, throughout my career, I tended to be kind of like professional Jessica and personal Jessica, and they weren't integrated well. And I got some advice from actually a parenting mentor who said, look, like try being yourself more at work and kind of see where it gets you. And I think, you know, you can kind of play that into the marketing side too, of actually letting people get to see the real me, the ways I can be goofy, the ways I make jokes that just like absolutely fall flat and everyone stares at me, like that willingness to just be the real me, not just the professional me in those contexts. Honestly, I think that was a big hurdle personally, and I think it has a lot of follow-on effects into the marketing space as well.
Yeah. Man, so much of that is so good. I mean, yeah, I resonate with the kind of sharing more of your personal life in work, especially like as I'm seeing AI make certain things feel very either overdone or just, it just feels like, oh, that's been seen that, done that, kind of like there's just a lot of repetition in certain things. People are looking for something unique. What's more unique than your own personal personality and the stories that you can bring to the table? And I found the more I open up about some of that personal stuff, the more people gravitate towards it. And it makes making content a little bit more fun. It makes it a little bit more easy. But yeah, it is interesting to see that. I think I struggled with that a lot when I first started my business. I was in my late 20s when I did. And I just felt like, I feel like, do I still look like I'm in college? Like, are people going to take me seriously with this? Like, I just felt, I think, a lot of insecurities when I first started off. And I've, over the years, become a little bit more established in that, or just established in the mentality of like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do this and put myself out there anyways. Or I see people who are younger than me, like doing it too. And I'm like, why am I putting this like roadblock in front of me? But yeah, it is interesting. The more I leaned into just being more myself in work, it's definitely been helpful. So I appreciate that a lot that you shared that. And also just that, like, you tried something, it didn't work, and you know, maybe you gave up for a little bit, but clearly you didn't completely give up, you know? And I love that you stuck with it to find an area where your people are, you know, because you had mentioned you were doing a lot with like Facebook and Instagram. And now it sounds like your focus is more on the LinkedIn platform and podcast and email, which sounds, based on my experience working with folks in very like senior level roles or in just professional services, I mean, those channels make perfect sense. So I love that you stuck with it enough to be like, all right, we're going to try a different place. We're going to try a different strategy and see if it works. So I love that. It's just such a encouragement to me. And just a good reminder when sometimes you're talking to people and it gets depressing when they're like, well, we've done all these things and they haven't worked. And I'm like, okay, but it doesn't sound like you've tried the right things. So I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah. Well, it's really, you know, kind of finding where the audience is. And, that was the big lesson. Like some of my people are on Facebook and Instagram, but they are not there for work related things.
Yeah.
They don't want to think about work. They don't want to talk about work. Like they are there to be their personal selves. And, even though, you know, this personal professional integration has been a key part of my journey, it's not the same for everybody else. Yeah. And so, but also at night when I'm looking at the memes my husband sends me on Instagram, I don't necessarily need to think about work.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you talk about sending memes back and forth because that's what my husband and I do too. yeah. So, okay, cool. All right. So as we kind of tie all these loose ends together, obviously the journey is not over for you. But if you were to give any advice to somebody who's maybe listening and in a similar situation where like they're, you know, living, breathing their role within a company, but they also have some ownership or they want to be a face of the brand. Like, do you have any advice about like, how can they go get their next marketing win? It doesn't have to be big. It can be small, but what advice would you give to someone?
Yeah, just really look at what you're already doing and figure out how to get that to a bigger group of people. If you enjoy having conversations about your business and your group, like do a couple podcast episodes. It doesn't have to be forever. Like, see if you like it. Run an email by somebody, by whoever sends your, you know, email blasts out, like say, hey, I have this thought. I mean, some of the thought leadership just has to be a couple paragraphs on something. You know, see if, you know, hey, I'm thinking about this, you know, figure out what the right space is for that. The book that I eventually wrote a couple of years ago had started out as a series of trainings that I wanted to do. And I was actually leading up to COVID that I was preparing to like run all these webinar trainings, and then COVID shut everything down and I didn't have the space for that. But then a couple of years later, they became my book. So just like be thinking about like, what do I have to offer somebody else and how can I get the word out?
I love that. I love that. Such great ideas and such great inspiration. Jessica, thank you so much for sharing about your journey, your story, and just what you guys are doing in the higher education world. And I'm just excited to see where you continue to take the brand. So thanks for coming on.
If you're new to the show, go ahead and hit subscribe on whatever podcast player you are listening to right now. That way you will not miss a single episode of Marketing Wins.